Are you ready?
I'm ready.
3, 2, 1.
Alpine.
Apple. Okay. We go again. 3, 2, 1.
Tree. Solar.
Okay. Ready?
Ready.
3, 2, 1.
Cross
photosynthesis.
Stitch. I think we're getting closer.
3, 2, 1.
Chemistry.
Sun. 3, 2, 1. Reaction.
Physics.
There's no need to scream. 3, 2, 1. Gravity.
Enrico Fermi. Sorry.
One word. I knew you were going to fucking break the rule. Okay. We got this. Got this. We got this. 3, 2, 1.
Or
laboratory.
Do we just keep shooting past each other?
Okay. Hold up. Okay. 3, 2, 1. Observatory.
Newton.
We're back to Apple. We can't do Apple. I already said it. 3, 2, 1.
Telescope.
Science. That one's on me. Okay. Okay, yeah. 3, 2, 1. Astronomy.
Optics.
The science of a telescope. No, mind meld. Mind meld. Can't. Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Galileo.
Fiber.
What did you say? Fiber?
Yes.
I suppose.
Okay. 3, 2, 1. Solar. That's two words. And solar was a word already used. I fucked up. 3, 2, 1.
Google.
Jupiter. 3, 2, 1.
Heresy.
NASA. That's so funny. 3, 2, 1.
Moon.
Liberal. What did you say?
Moon.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Kennedy.
Armstrong. Fuck. God damn it. Ah.
Oh man, I thought we had that one.
Got this, got this. Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Apollo.
Yes! Yes! We're done! We're done! Ah! We trapeze around Scotland looking for clues about our dead mother in Nancy Drew, the Silent Spy.
Buzz, storm of buzz, and we're going to tell you about how we saved the world.
Welcome, 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 welcome. Welcome, 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 welcome back to another episode of ASMR August. This is Storm Buds, the video game podcast with themed months, and this month we're relaxing. 10 points if you can figure out what this item I'm tapping on is. What does it sound like? Where does it take you?
A hint, it is not a calculator case.
It is not a calculator case, nor is it a Siamese cat. I am your favorite fitness instructor of light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I am joined by
construction worker
of light, Alexander Hambrock. Say hello.
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 It's not really a Scottish accent, is it?
No.
That's more like
London. Hello. How do you do a relaxing Scottish accent? Inquiring minds want to know.
I'm trying to figure out what I can do that isn't just like
that's Irish.
A kind of offensive Scrooge McDuck impression.
Hello, wee man.
Hello?
Got yourself into a bit of a pickle there, haven't you? Well, I suppose it's time we talk at a normal volume about Nancy Drew, the Silent Spy.
You know, I think our brief Scottish accent there was better than any of the Scottish accents in this game.
I disagree. Strongly disagree. This game is a Nancy Drew game in the long-running Nancy Drew series of games, a series of games about a detective woman named Nancy Drew, who is a spinoff or just in the Hardy Boys universe for girls.
Okay, do we want to go all the way back?
I don't know anything about the full context of Nancy Drew, and I can't believe I'm the only one listening that does.
Okay, so this actually goes all the way back to the original sort of like, they're not... The young adult category has changed a lot and is like actually called as a thing called young adult is relatively new. Mm-hmm. But the idea of books aimed at young teenagers goes back a very long time. And the Hardy Boys books and the Nancy Drew books were a series, both series of popular mystery fiction aimed at like 13-year-olds starting, I want to say, in like the 1940s. Let me pull this up here, actually. Point being, yeah, 1930s. 1930s is when they originally get published, and then they get all republished in 1960s with a lot of the racism removed.
Nice.
I actually have read every published Hardy Boys book and every published Nancy Drew book in the original runs, back before they then all kept getting revived in the 80s and 90s and stuff like that. I was very much a Nancy Drew kid. So, very popular, long-running series of books that, along with some other things, popularized the idea of the kid detective. Mm. You know, Nancy is 16, her dad's a lawyer, she has a convertible, she has her two best friends, Bess and George. They're constantly getting invited to, like, I don't know, visit our ranch where someone's also doing, like, land speculation out of a secret room in the basement.
Hey, hot question. Is Nancy 16 in this game?
No, I don't think so. I think she's a little bit older here. I think she's supposed to be like 16 in like the earlier games from the early 2000s. I think they aged her up.
So,
for
this yeah, one. She doesn't sound 16. Well, nor does she do things that a 16-year-old should be doing, because she takes a trip to Scotland on her own volition.
Oh, that's a Nancy Drew thing. She'd do that if she was 16.
Okay. Well, I don't. Yeah, without her parents' consent at all. So that's a lot to take in. Okay, interesting. I did see there's not a whole lot of Bess in this.
Yeah,
just brief mentions of it, because Nancy Drew is, this game takes, as far as I know, entirely in Scotland. So a lot of the regular cast is just there via phone.
Yeah, which is how it's been in some of the previous games also. Okay. Often Bess and George are like your hint line. You call them up when you're stuck and they're like, gee, Nancy, have you checked under the pitcher in the fridge yet?
So one thing you can do in this game that I foolishly did was run it on the master sleuth mode.
Oh, you all the hard puzzles?
I was like, yeah, why not? And then I was like, oh, I am so not invested in this enough to actually want to work out these puzzles. That was a big mistake. I might restart this game on the easy mode, because also I would like, I learned that, like, oh yeah, I would like to call people for hints, because that's good gameplay flavor. Mm-hmm. So but otherwise the plot of this game, Nancy gets a cryptic message from a group called Cathedral on her phone.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I'm guessing regularly there's just a lot of loose ends that are thrown at you at once with Nancy Drew games, and you're supposed to piece together the mystery as they go along.
Now,
one of the things that kind of confused me, mm-hmm, is like, oh, Cathedral, Revenant, these groups, like, who, what do they do in relation to anything? And then I'm like, I stopped caring. But anyway, she gets a message from Cathedral to come to Scotland because there's new information about the death of her mother.
Now, Jerome, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Cathedral's like a spy agency, right?
I have no clue.
They I'm sure they protect like the UK, right?
I genuinely don't know.
Keep going then.
I don't know anything. Let me tell you as far as I got, right? I did go to Cathedral and they had spy gear stuff, and then I got into the archives and there were a lot of password protected stuff, and I said, I don't want to do that right now. And then I got as far as the safe house in Scotland, so... and then I opened the fireplace, and then there was a safe, and I said, I don't want to do that right now. And then I got into, where was the other thing? There was another puzzle I was working through. Let's see. I had just broken into the other girl's, room.
Yes.
And solved her tartan password, which was hysterical. Hysterical puzzle.
Oh, good. I'm glad you got that
puzzle.
That
puzzle was
hoping,
so funny.
I was hoping you got to the phone lock screen.
Imagine having to just be... Like, there's this girl who has a smartphone, or BlackBerry, I guess, really, when you think about it. And her lock screen, you know, back in the 00s, all we did for our lock screens was just a simple, like, finger drawing or whatever, most of the time. Now everything's fingerprint protected, or maybe you have a longer passcode or something. But no, but this woman, well, she's ahead of things. She has a full-on random tartan that you have to construct, like, line by line, layer by layer. One at a time. And, of course, on Master Sleuth mode, it was nap, so it just took
extremely
so
difficult.
Anyway, I got that far, but I wasn't able to check off the break into her room thing on the task list, so I don't know what I did wrong there.
Oh, it's like a letter you have to find or something in her nightstand. Whatever.
There were a couple of concurrent puzzles that I was just sort of unwilling to solve. And then in the broader narrative of the story, I was unwilling to dig deeper into on my own volition. I may revisit this game on easy mode because it's not fun. It's a fun game, but it's not actually worth expending mental energy on.
So this game is made by Her Interactive, a small studio that is, to my knowledge, perpetually on fire. And it shows in... I think of these games almost like community theater. They are trying to do a lot with what is very clearly basically no budget.
Yeah.
And I often think that they succeed at trying to be what they're trying to be while being made for, I don't know, $300,000 maybe?
Yeah. These games are... I'm not going to say everything about every game. I don't know. Maybe some of them are really, really not fun. But this game, The Silent Spy, is very much high camp.
They're all like that.
Okay.
The characters get you through these games because
they are. There's a guy who is pretty obviously bad that you meet right away because Nancy gets her luggage stolen pretty early in the game, and then he says, "Oh, don't worry, I'll chase after him and find him for you, random person, and I'll find your luggage." And of course, when you get your luggage back, things aren't all there. So, but he is a particular favorite of mine because he just. 0 to 100 goes from affable and charming to will break into your house and slit your throat.
Yeah.
And there's no nuance.
Always hanging out at the train station, just always at this abandoned train station, just standing there.
Yeah. He's the only one there. Like, I would say he's the most conspicuous person ever, but Nancy seems to not be picking up on it.
No.
Nancy is wholly oblivious to her entire surroundings, so much so that when you meet up with Moira and she asks, "Were you followed?" And she's like, "I don't think so." And it's just like, Nancy, you were probably followed by the entire country of the United Kingdom. Nancy, you could have been followed by a barking chihuahua and you wouldn't have noticed.
So this game in particular, it's badly written in two of my favorite ways, which is one, every conversation is between two people who seemingly have never spoken to another human being before.
Mm. Or at least not in the last 10 years.
Yes. And two.
And Moira, probably. She seems to have been in hiding.
Yes. And two, the plot appears to be written by someone whose only mediation with the outside world is through network television.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I don't know that this person's ever gone to a grocery store.
And I've mentioned those characters, but my absolute favorite character is Bridget, who is visiting from somewhere else in Scotland, apparently. And she just walks up to Nancy and she says, "Are you American?"
It's so funny.
Like, what?
And then she gives the Scottish guidebook.
Here's a guidebook to Scotland.
I had it in my hotel room. I love reading about my home country.
I'm so excited to be in the big city, but I can't live here or something. I can't. You guys have to play this game believe it. If you haven't played a Nancy Drew game, which I had it, and I thought, what? What? It doesn't bury the lead with its camp or with the direction it's going. And let me tell you. There's one thing that you can do that I did for a very long time because I thought, surely I'm going to need all this money. And that is stack together a whole lot of cookies. There's a cookie stand, a food stand outside the hotel that says help wanted. And then you click on the help wanted sign. You can click on it and they'll give you a job immediately.
And then you make like 10 euros per cookie.
And then you make 10 euros per cookie, which is a sick rate. That's incredible. But man, those cookies are outrageous. They look awful.
Pounds, I guess. I forget what they use in Scotland.
I guess it would be pounds. Yeah. They used pounds before Brexit. Sorry. Sorry to actually a large majority of our listeners that live in the UK. Hello over there. We are ignorant, but we realized our mistake. Anyway, I did that. Did not understand what was going on because there's no real explainer for how to do things. So I just made about 20 bad cookies, but I was determined to find out. Because I don't know, maybe on Master Mode it's harder, but they are absolute magic eye of layers and misery.
They're quite tricky. There are times where you have to be like, wait, so I think there are red sprinkles under the top cookie, but
then there's blue sprinkles on the top cookie, but then you cut the blue sprinkles out. Could you imagine ordering that cookie and then having blue sprinkles in the middle of the cookie that weren't cut out? And you'd be like, no, fuck you. I'm not fucking paying for this. There's too many blue sprinkles. This is garbage. This game is wholly outrageous. Highly recommend it.
So I want to call out here especially. So voice actress for Nancy Drew herself, Lanny Minella, voices Nancy in all but the most recent game that came out a few years ago, to some controversy. Like,
I bet. Yeah.
Sort of iconic for this role. Like, you know, people love this voice. She's been doing it since like early 2000s. Can I read you some of her other voice acting credits?
Absolutely not. Just kidding. Go ahead.
In Super Smash Brothers Brawl,
she's Palutena.
She's the voice of Lucas, and I believe
what?
Pit.
Oh wow, that's fantastic. I was thinking like, oh no, Palutena is 4, so no, damn it. But I was thinking like, man, that does sound like auto reticle.
Yeah, Lucas, Lin, and Pit.
Okay. Fuck's Lin.
In
is this trophy,
she plays a bunch of people in The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim.
Of course. Who doesn't play a bunch of people in The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim?
One of my favorite moments I've ever seen on a stream was back when I watched a lot of Giant Bomb. Alex Navarro over there had been playing through a bunch of the Nancy Drew games, you know.
Yeah.
And so he'd gotten very familiar with this voice actor. And then randomly he was playing, I believe, Mass Effect Andromeda, and he walked into this cave and met this female Krogan, and she started talking, and it took him like 15 seconds, and he was like, is that Nancy Drew?
She's stuck. I mean, I don't know. I would never stop that gig if I got it. That sounds like a good deal, because it's not like... Again, I don't want to slag off voice actors for their work. Voice acting is really hard work, especially when you're not given a whole lot of direction to go with, which I imagine she wasn't, because these line reads are all said completely out of context.
Yes, it's so not funny.
She has so many lines to read too, so she can't do a million recordings on each of them. So they're given, they can only, and I'm sure she's. I'm sure she's also a union actress, so they can only, if they don't have that much money, they can only ask her for so much of her time. So not her fault, but my God, it just sounds like she's talking to a brick wall half the time. And to be fair, the characters she's talking to often behave like brick walls.
That's the thing, right? Like all of this, a lot of it is meant to be witty dialogue, but it just doesn't make any sense.
Not in the slightest.
And it's all voice acted. Like, everything is voice acted.
It is, impressively enough. It's, I mean, definitely comparable to something like Disco Elysium, the director's final cut, right?
I put them side by side.
Side
by
side. Especially also in terms of gameplay. Now, I did mention that I got as far as the safe house, but next to the safe house, there was a particularly aggravating mini game for archery.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the archery game
that you have to do in order to be able to break into Bridget's room. Wow. What a stinker. What a treat.
Oh, it's probably way harder on like the hard difficulty too.
Is it? Because the arrows just veer. You fire, like you have to obviously delay for the perceived distance, which is displayed as this the time, but there's just a random veer to the arrow, and it's not dependent on how far you're shooting the arrow.
I don't know that my version had that. That might be a difficulty thing.
Oh my god, that was agony. I'm never doing Master Sleuth on any Nancy Drew game again.
What high score did you need to beat to get the
55?
Really? Mine was 37.
This is garbage. I had to get like two bullseyes, and my arrows were veering. Oh my god. This is so unfair. Then I got to the bagpipes and I was like, no thanks, I cannot decipher this right now, because the bagpipes are right next to their archery, and I was like, I am absolutely not doing this.
The other thing these games are known for is just their nonsense puzzles. You haven't gotten here yet, but I'm just going to spoil it for you. A little bit beyond where you're at right now, you're going to flip down a seat cushion in the train station.
Oh no, I did see that.
Oh yeah, and there's a weird color slider puzzle on the back side of the seat cushion.
And then it's just like, you're being watched.
That's it. Yeah, exactly.
Like, cool. Like, well, that was a dead end. Right? That's it, right? I'm not, I mean, maybe it's not a dead end, but like, you probably have to do that for something. I did die.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, that happens too.
I didn't expect just a you died screen for choosing
the trash compactor or
what?
I think you can die in the trash compactor later, but
I snipped the wires of the trash compactor because the cool voice on the phone told me to. But I died in the abduction scene because I got in the wardrobe instead of the other wardrobe. And I was like, okay, whoa, what's the point of that? Why did they include this? Just to traumatize some child? Oh my god.
Oh yeah, no, every one of these games, usually near the end, but I guess occasionally earlier, has at least one moment where Nancy can die in an implied quite gruesome death.
Oh my god.
I've seen her get trapped in mines. I've seen her fall off buildings.
So it's traumatized me as a child. That would suck. It's funny now, though. Good thing I'm 35.
I will say, talking about the plot just a little bit also, I did start to go, as the shape of the plot started to emerge more into focus. And it was like, oh, what if terrorists caused a pandemic?
Yes,
but
I was
not
just like,
to
oh,
kill
no.
people, just to make them sick enough that then they could pose as the emergency services
and
roll in and take political power. And I was like,
could you read the date or the year this came out?
2013.
Okay, so that didn't necessarily, we're playing this in 2024, the COVID pandemic still ongoing, like it's not fully endemic. You know, it's up for debate whether or not the COVID pandemic is over. It's probably not very real to a lot of people, especially who are immunocompromised. And I would say the only instance of this kind of happening across the world that I could find was in Japan. I think in some of the more remote regions of Japan, the Yakuza were able to organize and gain semi-legitimacy in certain communities. In response to maybe not even the pandemic, maybe I'm confusing the pandemic with the tsunami, or maybe they do both, right? Maybe that's the kind of thing.
But generally speaking,
the Yakuza are not a non-violent group of people. Like, they're not just this like weird, and not just like this weird QAnon group that just suddenly manifests out of nothing.
Exactly. And that's the thing, right? Like, specifically the conspiracy being that, like, the disaster is faked, that emergency services gain power. That, like, you take that too far, you end up like with some lizard people shit before long.
Yeah. I was really not interested to see where those threads went, to be honest with you. At least not without a camera rolling. You know, it's like, I can't do this for my own enjoyment anymore.
That's what I mean about, like, you know, like the plot being written by, like, just like, I don't even think I read anything malicious into, at least I haven't gotten to the end of the game, but I don't think so. I think it's just like fucking, it's all the kind of tropes you ingest if mostly what you watch is like fucking CSI, SVU, and YouTube.
Okay, these purple. These people certainly did not live through a pandemic.
Yeah, that for sure.
That is not exactly how that would have gone down.
Look, is it a good mystery? I don't think so. Is it a good story? Not really. Is it very entertaining? 100%.
Yeah, it's something. It's something. The only thing I question I have unresolved, because I've not finished this game, but is like, do these people just have a vaccine ready? Are they going to deploy it? I don't know. I guess I'll find out someday. Like, what, like, if they don't and somebody else comes up with a vaccine for their non-lethal incapacitating virus or whatever, or everyone's immune system, or
comment in there about, like, it has to be slow enough to not induce herd immunity. And I was like, that's an interesting phrase to have top of mind in 2013.
Well, we all know the flu exists.
I guess, yeah.
We had those cow stickers on our dorms.
Oh, sorry. The last thing, the thing I was getting at earlier also, Cathedral, the secret agency that has brought Nancy here but might not be on the up and up, and their enemies Revenant, the terrorist group, right? Cathedral does not appear to be a spy agency that defends the UK. It does not even appear to be a spy agency that defends Scotland. It appears to be a spy agency that defends Glasgow specifically. It's true. And the terrorist attack is also staged on Glasgow specifically. It's like if someone set off a bomb downtown so they could take over being mayor of Chicago. Like...
And why was Nancy's mom an operative for this Glasgow specific intelligence agency?
And she's like, she was a reporter, which I don't know if we knew that before. Like, I don't know how much Nancy's mom has come up in previous games, but the reveal that she died as a result of being a spy.
Is that in the books?
I don't think so.
Nancy's dead mom in her young adult books? I don't know. I guess Harry Potter succeeded with dead parents. It's a pretty regular trope.
Well, I think she is dead in the books. I just don't think that she died stopping a fake pandemic in Scotland.
That sounds, that would have been wild had that come up in the 50s.
I think she died in like a car crash or something.
They do say that a lot, that we thought she died in a car crash.
Okay, then.
So this game is 100% retconning Nancy Drew lore. I wonder if that's controversial. Let us know if you've played this, Drew stan, and this game is controversial.
I cannot imagine being precious about the Nancy Drew canon. I cannot imagine a franchise with less cohesion.
Well, that's probably going to do it for our discussion on Nancy Drew, the silent spy. I am going to go put my hands in some local cement to cause some trouble and make my mark on this city. And when we're doing that, we'll have an ad break and we'll be right back with discussion of part 3 of Secret of Evermore.
We're gonna read some ads.
You know, Jerome, you're one of my best friends. Okay. You're my podcast co-host.
Thank you.
Unfortunately, I have to fire you.
Oh, all right.
It's just, you see, you know, it's Taco Tuesday. We're recording this on Taco Tuesday. We had a platter of tacos before we came in here, but you're not dressed appropriately. You know, your socks don't have any kind of novelty taco patterns on them or really anything related to, you know, Tex-Mex cuisine whatsoever.
You are going to have to pay for your own editing software. I imagine you've got the like $700 lined up to cover that.
Well, you know, you could be unfired if you dressed like Biggs over there. You see that Biggs is wearing his little taco-themed booty socks?
Yes, my cat Biggs is wearing his taco-themed booty socks. He was not wearing those 10 minutes ago.
That's because Biggs matches the office culture that we have here.
The office is my house.
You know, it's really important that everyone dresses appropriately on Taco Tuesday so that we all feel unified as a team here in this physical office that we come to every day.
It's Thursday. Today's Thursday.
Sometimes Taco Tuesday is on a Thursday.
No, it's not. Oh.
Look, if you want your job back, I think you need to subscribe to Food Socks.
Okay.
Food socks, you know, they come in bundles, and for every possible themed food day that you might have at your office, be they birthdays, be they taco days, be they potluck days or whatever, they give you an appropriate pair of socks that have a matching pattern that will ensure that you fit in and match the office culture so that your boss decides to fire Jeremy, the new guy, instead when it rolls around and it's time for layoffs because health insurance premiums have gone up by 25%.
Oh, man. Friendwalkers will never be the same without Jeremy.
No, it's a solo show now.
I'm looking at foodsocks.co.nz, and I am seeing a whole host of foods that are maybe non-specifically related to a lot of themes. Could you tell me sort of what this sort of this panna cotta sock is for? I got the Taco Tuesday one. I see the birthday cakes, but really this
The panna cotta one is for, it's for like happy hour, but a slightly more upscale place, like a wine bar.
Oh, okay. That sounds fantastic. Yeah. How about this lamb chop sock?
The lamb chop sock is for when you and your boss go out after the football game and you go to that, to like, an old country buffet.
Okay. And there's these socks that I think are actually the candy helium balloons that you can get from Grand Akats' store, Alinea. Store? Restaurant Alinea?
Yeah, those are for if you go to Alinea.
Okay, that makes sense. I really should have thought about that. As soon as I kind of left my mouth, I was like, oh yeah, that would kind of be the one place. I imagine that place would really fire you. They would find what your job is and fire you if you didn't dress appropriately. Which is, I guess, what's happening to me.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean,
if I subscribe to this, how much is it?
It is $36 a month.
That's a lot. That's a lot. And
But how much is your job worth, really?
Well, here's the thing, right? I have a thing about my socks. And what I do is I, like, probably routinely, maybe once every year, I throw out all my socks. And then I buy a whole host of new socks that are the exact same socks so that I never have to match socks or worry about my socks mismatching.
That's really smart.
Or actually worrying about like my socks having different textures at any given time so that I never have to think about socks again, because thinking about socks will like ruin my day if I do it. So I don't know if I can guarantee that I will sign up for this and use it for myself, but these would make great gifts.
Well, and what if I told you with promo code StormBuds, you can get 17% off?
Of what?
Of the subscription for 6 months.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like 17% off of the socks.
Oh.
They would be much shorter. I misinterpreted. I'm sorry. Well, that sounds like a fantastic deal. And 17% off of $36 a month? Do it right now. You have 2 seconds.
Seriously, we need to close this one, okay?
You have 2 seconds.
This came in like...
You don't know.
This
you
came
have
in
no
like
clue.
3 weeks ago. I was
Come
supposed
on,
to do
10%,
this like 2 episodes ago.
10? Oh, it's too late. It's too late. You messed up.
Great. Well, now the podcast is actually going to shut down because this check's going to bounce because we missed our window for people to actually like, you know, use the promo code. They were using that UTM tracking. I hope you're all happy.
They might be. Okay, I'm back. You'll never guess where I put my handprints.
Where did you put your handprints?
You know, the Chicago rat hole.
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar.
Now it's a rat hole with two big ass hands next to it.
I'm sure people will love that.
I think, didn't they take the rat hole up and like, put it in a bar? That's what I heard.
Possibly.
They took the tile up because it was disrupting people's lives who lived there.
I saw a post of someone earlier, I think this week, who was found another rat hole, though, so...
That's the thing. There's a lot of Chicago. There's a lot of rats in Chicago, and
it's
there's
really
a lot
bad
of wet cement.
It's really bad this year too.
Like, you guys, don't be sad that the Chicago rat hole's gone. There will be another one.
Yes,
might be on my fucking balcony. Who knows? Oh man. Well, we're gonna get right into discussing our month-long long play. This is the long play video game podcast of Secret of Evermore. Right?
Correct.
We did our third zone, which ends at variable places, depending.
I got the airship. I stopped when I got the airship.
You stopped when you got the flappy wing ship?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Cool. I went a little bit farther than you, but I think that's a totally fair stopping point. And next week, we will finish the game. We're really not that much farther in. I'm about, 28 to 29 hours in?
I guess so, yeah.
And my old save file on there that's done is, 35 hours, so... We will definitely finish it next week. We're not too far off. But this zone, it comes off the heels of our adventure in Antiqua and Nobilia with the Greek and Egyptian theme, classical or ancient history theme there. Not classical. Classical is a little bit... Whatever. I'm not an expert. It's ancient history. And we're headed more into a more medieval history now.
Sort of. I'm not sure if kind you need towns that are built like this, but...
No, it's, yes, absolutely. Like
a hillside town like this? Like, I guess.
Yeah, and on a mountain, yes. On a mountain, mountains are easily fortifiable. Think of,
I guess. Okay,
you
know, okay,
you're
Spain,
right. And the conquistadors and stuff and everything.
Sure,
you know,
okay.
There's a whole lot of, yeah, absolutely, things like this, mountain towns.
We're off to, like, medieval slash vaguely renaissance slash vaguely
yeah,
all
goth,
of that.
Very gothic. Mm-hmm. Stone architecture. Hello, what's it? Pip, beats people with berets. Lots of Renaissance fair cosplayers here. It's well. What were your overall impressions of the third zone? Of this game.
I liked all the story stuff and mm-hmm. the characters.
Mm-hmm.
I hated that fucking forest.
Yes. Okay. Great. Yeah. That sounds about right. I think the third zone suffers a bit from pacing issues in gameplay, and that is due to budget and time constraints.
Sure.
Unfortunately, this game was just on a deadline. This was the first game of their company, so and a lot of the creative. There's a lot of creative and development dissonance in this game, especially maybe it comes through in this zone, like. I think the creative team thought that this was going to be a much darker and more grotesque kind of game, or when I say creative team, the aesthetic team, I guess, and then the writing ended up having a lot of,
I was gonna
like,
say, yeah, those things do not
corny
match.
corny jokes and stuff, and I think there was a change in the guard when it comes to writers along the way. Hard to say. I know that there's a couple of developers who comment on Let's Plays of Secret of Evermore on YouTube who have mentioned such things, but they were largely kept in the dark about those decisions, mostly focusing on the code of the game. There's another market right as we can make it into Ivor Tower, which mm-hmm. is excellent. You get another chance to do some shopping, get some items.
Including the Chocobo Egg, which I grabbed from that alley.
Yes, that's good. It's a good one to get. There's a couple of amulets of annihilation around the town that let you pick up some really good armor, things like that. A lot of fun. Another marketplace segment. I kind of wish more games had marketplace segments like this, because I think they're fun puzzles to solve. And I wish they kind of iterated a bit more on it, but I understand why they maybe didn't.
Now, Ivor Tower, would you say it's like a dirty place?
No, it's clean, spotless, impeccable.
It's very clean.
Very clean.
Everyone's very happy to live in the extremely clean Ivor Tower.
Yes, absolutely. And what's so clean, what's peculiar about it is that they came from this dirty, dirty place across the ravine called Ebon Keep. Oh, no. Bad. Anyway.
And everyone is like, ever since we moved over here, the queen acts nice, but she seems like she's faking it. And I was
well,
like,
we don't meet the queen yet, because in this clean, clean tower, we have to have a dirty, dirty pig race.
We do.
Which is a really fun sequence. I love the pig race.
The whole thing here where you go up to the oddities, like expo or whatever.
So good. Just gag after gag of oddity of like... Just a complete scammery until the reveal that they have stolen your dog and turn and put a pig mask on your poodle dog, and then your poodle dog runs into the pig race. It gets you into trouble again. You're like, all right.
I admire a story like this where, like, acknowledging that they have no ability to actually, like, give the main character agency or let him drive the action, they instead go the complete opposite direction and the entire story just runs on the most absurd contrivance. You are just carried forward by this barreling narrative momentum.
It's fantastic. And because our dog is a dog and not a pig, he's able to... easily outrun all the pigs. We win first place and our ticket to the keep to meet the queen.
This whole sequence of, like, how do we get in to see the queen? Well, our dog will win a race with a prize of which is to get dinner with her. It's mm-hmm. like just
and then the dog is carried off because they don't want to drag dog dirt into the office or office what into the castle, but he is about to be eaten.
The chef's going to prepare him.
Immediately. There's just no breaks in this sequence. You're a child talking to royalty, and you're putting your foot in your mouth constantly. Meanwhile, your dog is being chased around this carpeted kitchen, this kitchen with a rug in it, into some vents.
Very well-ventilated castle.
Extremely
yes.
well-ventilated castle. Love to see it. Very progressive. And this begins the dog maze vent. Did you find the old woman? Oh, you said you were doing a walkthrough, right?
I used to go, like...
Good, because...
I did find her, like... I'm not, like, following the walkthrough step by step. I tend to consult it when I get stuck, but I got stuck here, and then they said to look for the one with the key, and I was like,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and there's, like, these flashing lights in one of the things that guide you to her.
Yep, okay.
Which is great, because, yeah, those that's another missable alchemy formula. If you don't have the key, you can't open the doors in Ivor Tower to get the firepower formula and the merchant that sells the feathers, which are way too expensive.
They're extremely expensive.
Anyway,
I'm gonna be honest, I keep getting all these new spells and I keep being like, you know what's great? Sting.
I forgot to ask.
Which?
Did you take Lance's shit?
Well, no, I got this right. I got
this
right.
Oh my god, no way. No way. This is such a bullshit move on this game's part.
You open the chests,
yeah,
and then like, mm-hmm.
But there's one house at the bottom of Ivor Tower that's like, please take all our stuff if it'll help you get to Ebon Keep or whatever. But then there's one house where this woman's like, don't you fucking touch Lance's stuff. He keeps all his shit in the treasure upstairs. Don't touch it. And if you go up there stairs and you take it and you take the stuff, which is admittedly good shit, very good shit.
Well, then after Lance tells you can take it.
Yeah, well, no, Lance... but it's like, yeah, but after he's like, hey, I can't believe you touched my shit without permission. I was going to help you out, but you can go to hell.
Well, no, I did that first, and then I safe stated and came back and didn't do it. But
bastard.
I cheated.
It's fine. It's bullshit, because it's complete bullshit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you leave his stuff alone, then go down, he gives you my favorite formula, Lance.
Lance has also been doing work.
Lance,
I've been leveling
Lance
up.
If you just, like, take a time to fast forward and then press the Lance alchemy on something like a whole bunch of times and level it up to like level 4, it just does like 400 damage in like a split second, and the ingredients are super cheap. You just buy them from Lance and you have 45 stacks at any given time. Super great. Good job, Lance Bass from NSYNC, for being in this game. Sweet cameo. Anyway, after spending a night in the dungeon
right, which you do
for disrupting the banquet, because the dog obviously made a big mess,
which is the first appearance of these weird red flying things that shoot you for a lot of damage.
Second appearance.
Where was the first?
You don't remember?
No, I where were these things?
Well, I guess I don't know. I guess you'll have to replay this game to okay. find out where the
find
first one.
Okay.
But it's that appearance is kind of a hint. As well as her obsession with cleanliness. Remember his cleanliness?
Right. Okay.
So these are all kind of hints that she's not necessarily
on the up and up.
Yeah, on the up and up. Everyone who likes things way too clean.
Oh, we also have we gotten to the puppet show yet? Or are we getting
no,
there now?
No, because that's at the very end of the act.
Yes. Okay.
We go to Ebon Keep first, because she's like, we break out of the dungeon. She's like, sorry about that.
No,
hey, I have a mission for you.
You can see the puppet show before the end, because I saw the puppet show.
Oh, yeah,
show.
You can go and you can watch the king be entranced by it. And it says,
yes.
All right, I DM'd you a
screenshot. Send me the screenshot. Like,
woe be woman, for she is to serve man. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, what is going on?
It's a wild optional sequence that they did. She sends you on this mission to get everyone out of Ebon Keep because they're filthy.
Yeah, and they're going to come and they're going to go clean it out.
They're going to go clean it out with force. So we get sent to the chess maze. Then underneath the chess maze is the aforementioned forest. God, this forest is huge.
It's so long.
It took me days to solve this as a child. Days. It was so frustrating.
Did you like map it out, or what did you
do? I eventually figured out that you're supposed to follow the little oglin in the tree.
Oh, yeah. I noticed that. Yep.
You didn't notice that one bit.
I
saw
noticed,
you do your eye roll thing.
I noticed he was up there. I didn't know what it signified.
It meant that you're supposed to follow him because he's going to lead you to the shapeshifter boss fight. But if you explore the forest, which I'm sure you did unintentionally, you will find the one-up formula, which is pretty nice.
Yep.
And if you, I forgot to do this, so I don't have the wizard's coin, but if you freed the oglin from the well before, if you touch the well at the beginning of the act and you freed the oglin, he's somewhere else in the forest and he'll give you the wizard's coin.
I did not do this.
It doesn't really matter. You get a bit of defense, but for completionist's sake, I was embarrassed that I had forgotten to do it, and I was like, I'm not going back.
Nope.
I'm not going back at all. And this is also where the pacing... So this is obviously a lot of filler. It is still kind of a fun fuck you moment, because there's these annoying dragons that are
yeah,
really hard.
These dragons everywhere. We keep
Lance
running.
Is good against them, mm-hmm. And so is Sting. But you're kind of low on ethanol at this point, probably. Or vinegar, I guess, is what Sting uses.
Well, and eventually at this point, you get to the Shadow Doppelganger fight.
Yeah, pretty easy.
Which pretty easy and very funny. After you finish it, you walk out and some guy's like, wow, thanks for clearing that out. Now passersby don't need to worry about being attacked by their shadow clones anymore. And I was like, oh, everyone had to deal with that?
Yeah. The kid's like, cool, I'll save your game for doing that. Sweet, thank you. And then you get a cool sword that you use for about 3 seconds before you fight a random dragon that drops a lance.
Yep.
And that is, again... And all that dragon does is cast fireballs at you and is an otherwise uninteresting boss fight. Budget constraints, unfortunately. Kind of the cracks of the facade of this game starts to show itself at this sort of late stage, which is a shame. Obviously, these fights could have been a lot cooler. We make it into Ebon Keep. We do a couple of things. Go through the sewers, meet up with Cecil from Final Fantasy IV.
Yes.
Who I'm sure you were like, I don't know anything about Final Fantasy IV, until he mentioned his battle with Zeromus. And then you were like, oh, I know that guy.
Yeah, no, actually, that one I do.
You're like, oh, yeah, okay.
I played a good amount of that Final Fantasy IV remake for the Nintendo DS.
Oh, right. That was actually really good.
Yeah.
So that was nice. He gives you a bazooka with one bullet in it. Don't worry, you'll use that bazooka later with infinity bullets.
I almost immediately fired the bazooka by accident.
I did, because I was like, I don't need to use this. I got Lance. Lance does more damage for now. And I like the... Well, anyway. We make it up to the tower. There's a wholly infuriating boss.
Yeah, fuck this guy.
If you don't have... I mean, it's the rat lord because of all the rats. They want to really drive in how dirty this place is, so they made a rat boss with a bunch of rats. And all he does is just acid storm you and shit.
It's a lot of damage.
He does a lot of damage, and it's like an alchemy race.
Here's actually a thing I've not been quite clear on. Does the defend spell defend you from magic damage as well, or just physical? I keep using it and then being like, I'm still taking a lot of damage. Does this do anything?
Yeah, I don't think it does do too much. Barrier is a much better version of defend that you can get as soon as you start playing again. But this, you can't. It doesn't matter for this boss fight. But anyway, what was I going to say? Once we blow this fucking rat up, we meet up with the real Camellia, who is super nice. And also, there's a couple of really good things about this act too I want to talk about. First is the dog maze music. Really good, really good woodwind instrumentation, woodwind and harp kind of duo track.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. Really leaves a lot of space, kind of windy. I don't know, it's just perfect for vents and things like that. Love that track. Another track that's excellent that they reuse twice is, as I mentioned last episode, Queen Blue Garden's theme, Camellia's theme. Fuck, that shit's good. That little, like, that womp, it starts with an arpeggiated, plucked guitar line.
You want to pull it up right now?
No. I'm going to describe it with words because I'm too lazy. Arpeggiated guitar line, and there's like a triangle or like a high-pitched xylophone percussion, metallic percussion that does a very slow melody that slowly descends in key. And then what comes in is this fat fucking womp womp orgy bass underneath it that's just boom, boom, boom. It's like slapping your ass while you're listening. While you're just on the beach. It's so good. It's such a... God, it's a good track. It's excellent. Excellent soundtrack for productivity candidate here. Completely chemistry, brain chemistry alterating track for me. I still love a thick womp, mid 80s bass like that, a wompy bass. I don't know how to otherwise describe it, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
it's in a lot of
it makes it feel synthy. Like,
it is very, very, it's like a weird mix of Miami Vice and a symphony orchestra, but it's so good. Love, and Camellia is just the sweetest button of a character.
She's great.
Absolutely, absolutely lovely.
And she also has an evil twin, which we discovered is the
other. Yeah, so the queen, the twist in this act, they kind of we meet the evil twin right away, who is obviously obsessed with cleanliness like everyone else was.
And then we meet her tinker, who uses a telescope to show us the other queen, and we can hear her being evil from like across the chasm.
Yeah, why not? We can read lips really well,
I guess.
She's conspiring with the advisor from the other place, who's, I don't know, it's just a minor character that exists. And we have to talk with Tinker's brother to get back to Ivor Tower, because we certainly can't just walk back to the hedge maze. Actually, no, Ivor Tower ups their drawbridge, yeah. So we can't go back, which is weird. It's like a little weird plot hole that, like, okay, we're over, and then we lowered the drawbridge down. So why did Ivor Tower put their drawbridge up? Because that was like the whole ask. We were supposed to not be able to lower the drawbridge. But you can go back into the Dark Forest if you want.
I did not.
Okay. Then we meet up to, I think, a relatively fun sort of maze up in the north. We get the axe and a bunch of formulas from his library. We meet up from the north. I don't know if you ended up using any of these formulas. Oh, no. Explosion's pretty good.
Explosion's pretty good. I did get super heal, thankfully.
Actually, was it explosion? There's super heal. Super heal from the kid. I love that kid / old man / kid again. Every time you enter the room, the kid says he's working on a formula to age and de-age.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Oh, that's really funny.
So if you enter and leave and enter again, he's an old man. Super heal's a super good one. The kind of, this is kind of a return to the bug muck in a little ways. We run up these rickety towers in a swamp.
Yeah.
And some of the platforms fall, and there's maggots again. There's reskinned maggots. It's not too long of a maze, though, unfortunately. Not
the
really
dragon at the
out.
Top was really annoying until dragon, I figured out I could stand on the stairs.
Yeah, the dragon fight, if you get too close to this dragon, he will drop you to a lower platform, but you could just stand on the stairs and use alchemy formulas and get him down. And he takes you, once you beat him, Tinker's brother takes you over to Ivor Tower. You confront the play. You do the final boss, which is actually the play that we had seen before. The which two is, puppets controlled by one of the acts of the freak show, Mongola.
Who is he and what's his deal?
Who, Mongola?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. He's just some swamp dude that...
Giant evil...
That is under the service...
Ghoul man?
Under the service of Queen Camellia? I don't know. That's scary enough. He's just a weird... a weird Bigfoot that is attacking us. It's scary. I don't like it. Anyway, that fight is actually pretty fun, in my opinion, because the puppet ads do keep respawning. They heal him for a little bit if they're up too long. So you can't really ignore them. But Sting makes good work of everything.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. At this point, like, none of these fights are really challenging, which I am A-okay with.
A-okay with. And Secret of Mana was the same way, to be perfectly honest with you. Once you got your... And it didn't even have that much of a resource system, because it just used MP. You didn't have to actually manage the economy of your alchemy ingredients. Not that it's that hard to do anyway, because you get... So much money. But it's a neat idea to actually have to go and stock up on your actual components for spells. Very early Dungeons & Dragons. Loved that. Loved that very much. So Queen Camellia, at this point, having her plan seemingly foiled somehow, I don't know, whatever, is so frustrated with you.
She sure does this.
She just... jumps off the balcony. She's like, hey, wait right there one moment. And she slowly jumps off the balcony.
And we
try to crush
move out of the
under
way.
Her body weight. And we just sidestep out of the way. And she crashes through the floor to her death.
And we're like, oh, she's a robot.
There's a whole bunch of gears and circuitry in this hole in the floor. She's a robot. That's wild. The king then gets up from his spell and gives us $10,000.
It's really nice.
Thank you
very
much.
I wish I got rewarded with $10,000 more often.
That would be pretty cool. We now with that threat out of the way, we are actually able to start work on a rocket ship, for which we need a couple of components. Tinker has given us a list of MacGuffins to go get across the world, and you now have the airship, and you can... fly back to some of those old zones that we explored and talk to some old friends. And we're going to do that on the next episode of Storm Buds. We'll talk about that and we will make it to the spaceship and finish the game.
I did take that airship up in the air and it sure is some mode 7, baby.
Oh, yeah. It's secretive mana. It's just like when you get flammy. But it's the world's not quite as big, unfortunately, but...
Well, now at least I know what all those weird circular bases mm-hmm. I kept finding were for. I kept running into and be like, is it a well? Should I be doing something?
Why is it so quiet here? It's just, the music always cuts out. It's weird. Now you know. They are waypoints. Do you have anything else you want to say about this chapter of Secret of Evermore before we close this chapter? Stormbuds.
Pretty impressive that this like Da Vinci-esque flying machine has like VTOL capabilities.
Just... Oh yeah, it just goes straight up. It's pretty cool. This guy did what Da Vinci couldn't. Whew. All right. That's going to do it for this, our 75th episode of Stormbuds. Thank you all so much for having listened to
75 years.
For about an hour, 75 years. This is our annual episode of Stormbuds. 75 times. Some of you 75 times consecutively for about an hour.
You
that's
guys are
a lot.
The best.
Or you need help.
I think they're the best.
Okay, they're the best. Good job. Great job. Keep it up.
They need help. They can go to... Actually, no, they should not go to Wetter Help.
If they
we're not advertising Wetter Help anymore.
They didn't pay us for this episode. But if you do need help with Secret of Evermore, for some reason, you could come into our Discord. And you could join it with the link in the description of the episode. You can find all our other socials there. It's kind of a link within a link thing. And hey, the more followers we have on those platforms, the more we are encouraged to... engage there. Honestly, I should just put the Discord at this point.
Should we get on LinkedIn?
No.
Okay, just put the Discord.
What a question. And again, next episode, we are going to be talking about... I think it's going to be our finale episode, and then we're going to talk about the games that we're going to do for September. So it's going to be our September draft. I added a bunch to our document. I'm really excited for that. September is going to be a banger of a month. You guys are going to love it. And that's really all I need to talk about. At this point, you guys know the deal. Thank you all so much for listening. I've been your host of Light, Jerome Barbatsis, and I was joined by my co-host of Light, Alexander Hambrock. Say goodnight.
Good night.
Sleep tight.
Don't let the bed bugs. I can't even joke about that.
You already did this bit.
I did?
Yes, and then I included it at the end of the episode. You had bed bugs for like 6 months.
Don't let the fireflies bite.
You would not believe your eyes. If 10,000 fireflies suddenly attacked you. And you had to run and go and scream. Okay, bye.
Bye.